This is The Gailey Show on AM950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm your host, JP Darabagosian. We celebrate LGBTQ culture in Minnesota and beyond. Or to put it another way, do you want to read, watch, or go to something queer this week? Well, that's why we're here. Today, Maya Williams is back to talk about The Color Purple film. Last week, Maya was on This Queer Book Saved My Life, which aired here on AM950. They shared so much about how The Color Purple's life-saving features for them. Well, now Maya's seen the film and is here to break it down for us. Plus, I saw Theater Latte Da's production that just opened last week in Minneapolis, so we're going to talk about that too. Then Anahit Cass joins me to talk about her new book, Reparations of the Heart, Toward a Swana Futurity, which is out now. But at first, my conversation with Maya. Maya Williams, welcome back to AM950, and welcome to The Gailey Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to talk to you again.
I know, right? So for our AM950 listeners, we had Maya, who is the 7th Poet Laureate of Portland, Maine, on our This Queer Book That Saved My Life episode that aired last Saturday. And so by a lining of the stars, the color purple stars, we have a special treat here to have Maya back to break down the film for us, to give their expert opinion on this film.
That's so
and
kind
the musical.
Of you. Expert opinion. I love it.
And I also, stars aligning, got to go see, I'm holding up the program for those of you watching on YouTube, The Color Purple, which just opened at Theater Latte Da in Minneapolis this past weekend. And so I'm looking forward to talking about all about The Color Purple here with our time today. So,
it's Maya, a beautiful advertisement, too.
I mean, look at this.
It's gorgeous.
I mean, for folks on YouTube, that is a stunning program. I mean, absolutely. And glossy paper. Like, well
so
done,
glossy.
Theater La-Di-Da. Really nice. Okay, Maya, why don't you get us started here talking about the film? What did you think?
Oh, my gosh. So my partner and I first saw the film on Christmas, and I loved it so much. I was so excited to see it. And also, there were some things, though, too, where I have so many questions about. Because it's like, okay, did you include this or rearrange this as a way to try to keep up with like present day audiences, or did you rearrange it for a different reason? So for folks who may not know, The Color Purple is based on the book by Alice Walker. And so in this film, you have Celie, who has a loving relationship with her sister Nettie. Unfortunately, they end up getting separated by the man she was forced to marry, who is called Mister throughout the majority of the film. And she has to deal with Mister's abuse until she meets people such as Sophia, who's her daughter-in-law, who's a lot more willing to stand up for herself while being married to Mister's son Harpo, and meets Shug Avery, who was Mister's lover, and then ends up becoming Celie's lover. Shug Avery is a lot more open about her spirituality and her sexuality, and so while taking all of those things into consideration, a huge part of the storyline and of the book that has happened in every single iteration since the book, as Harpo, Mister's son, is saying, "Oh my gosh, I want to get Sophia to mind. It's so annoying. She's so empowered. I don't like it." His father, Mister, says, "Well, why don't you beat her then?" And then sometime after that, Harpo asks Celie, "How can I get my wife to mind like how my dad gets you to mind?" And she said, "Well, what?" And she says, "Well, what did your dad say?" He said, "Beat her." She says, "Well, I guess that's what you have to do then." But then in the 2023 version, it's just a conversation between Harpo and Celie, and it's only Celie who says, "Why don't you beat her then?" And I don't like that. I do not like that, because it takes away the entire context of like why she says that, and and it tries to frame it in a way where it's like, hey, tries to give her some form of power back, even though it's not perfect. But still, I did not like that in this rendition.
It was, so that's in the stage version, right, as well. Mm-hmm. And it just also kind of made me go, wait, what? Mm-hmm. it gave me pause. It definitely gave me pause, because it did kind of feel like Mister was implying it. Mm-hmm. And was kind of showing by, you know, example.
Yeah.
But it did feel weird to have Celie saying that.
Yeah,
I will say that the actress who at the Theater La Dida production, and I have to give a shout out, Carnitha Anthony as Sophia, was spectacular and stole
yes.
the show for me. Hell No was my favorite song in
it's
the entire
such a good
thing.
Song. Yes. Every single actress in the universe who has ever played Sophia in any production ever of The Color Purple deserves their praises.
Now, you know, actually, now that I think about that, because of the song, does it set up the song, I guess, is where I'm going with that. Like, could you have Hell No if Celie didn't say that to Harpo?
That is a very good question. Like, yeah, you do need that song.
Not.
Because you do need the song as far as, like, because granted, yes, Sophia could sing the song on her own as a way to just address men in general. But what makes it so important to place the song after the conversation where she goes, oh, you told Harpo to beat me? Like, having to use this song as a reminder to Celie about, like, you might want to step it up if you want to stay alive. You might want to defend yourself so that you don't have to keep being under your husband's thumb. Like, my mom was just like you, and I tried my best not to repeat what my mom did, and like had to fight so many men growing up and never thought I had to do it in my own house. And it sucks that it was under the suggestion of a friend who I trusted. Like, that part is consistent all throughout, and that part is consistent through every iteration, and that's why that needs to be present. But yeah, just again, like how in the 2023 film, just taking away the context of Mr. going, just beat her. Even though, like, there is a scene in the movie where a younger Harpo sees Celie getting slapped in the face by Mister, so I guess that's how they tried to do like the implied thing. But still, I wished for wished that was done better.
Yeah. What did you think then of the queer relationship between Celie and Shug?
I'm so happy you asked. Oh my gosh. Because the book is the queerest version ever. The original book, The Color Purple, is the most explicitly queer. Right. And then you have the Steven Spielberg movie where they share one kiss, and it's sort of portrayed as like a platonic kiss too. So it's there's that. And I would love to hear how it was portrayed in this stage production in your town. And I'll let you get to that in a second. But how it was portrayed in the movie, I loved that there was more scenes where like they're touching each other's face affectionately, and they're dancing, and they go on a date together. I wish that their kiss was not in the dark in order to keep a PG-13 rating. So again, could be gayer, and both of these, granted, I understand there's a lot of debate and conversation about, like, when it comes to how sexual orientation is portrayed on screen or on stage, like, does it matter as far as like does the actor's sexual orientation need to match the characters? I'm not here to unpack that, but what I am here to say is like how much does the fact that these two actresses are straight, how much does that play into how much of their chemistry is portrayed on screen, and how much of that is because of the time back then, the fact that it was the early 1900s and being queer was illegal. So it's like, so it was so cute. And at the same time, I'm just like, it could be gayer, could be so much gayer.
I know. I mean, this is the problem, right? Like, we want to have this illusion that, you know, the best actor, actress gets the role. I mean, we want to keep that illusion, but then that means people don't really understand how casting works, right? Like, that's not what happens. You know what I mean? There's a lot of other things that go into it. Like, a lot of times there aren't even auditions, right? People are just handed roles. Okay. But straight and cis actors are artists, and they are bringing a vision right to their roles. And so when we look at something and you're saying something that, like, something could be gay, or I'm feeling the same thing, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. Is that because they were thinking about a PG-13 rating? Is that because they were thinking about, you know, we're releasing this on Christmas Day? Or was it literally the actors thinking that something was queer when really you're just like, maybe that's not as, you know, gay or queer, right, as you think? But
yeah,
in the stage production, it was steamy. I mean, literally. Oh, so, like, Seeley is giving Shoke a bath. I was like, oh, like, the way that she was, like, bathing her and suddenly recognizing, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? You know, and
well,
so you get this sense.
The bath is present in the movie, too. The bath is present in the movie as well.
Okay, I don't know how they did it there, but it was... like, well done, and I want to make sure I get their names right. Angela Wildflower as Suge and Nubia Monks as Seeley was, and particularly Nubia, that, like, queer awakening that was happening, and how she was singing the song where she begins to understand, like, oh, wait a minute, is this what it's supposed to feel like? Desire and, like, sex, and you just get this, like, feeling of more is compounding also the tragedy, right, of this marriage to Mister, and, you know, all of that goes along right with that. But again, I want to give Nubia some real credit there, because how she was singing those songs and performing that was really, really spectacular, and really kind of gave more nuance to the tragedy, right, of this marriage to Mister, and how, you know, you're just like, okay, this is probably sexual assault and rape that's happening here, right, in their wedding bed, quote unquote. But then to, you know, not have ever experienced that, and then to be experiencing it with Suge for the first time, which also, I'm curious, then in the film, there is a part in the stage production where Mister is like, I know what's been going on here. And the revelation of the triangle was really well done there. Now, obviously, it's, you know, kind of a, not a love triangle, but kind of a hate triangle, especially when, like, Mister's involved. But it was really well done, and how it's revealed, right, in the music and in the stage adaptation. So, wow, what did you think about it in the movie? What was it like for you watching it?
Yeah, in the movie, he never explicitly says things like, oh, I know what's been going on between you two, or like, hey, stay away from Suge, or anything like that. But after the music number for push to button, as Mister is expecting to, like, get an embrace or a piece of intimacy from Suge, Suge walks straight to Seeley, and they're both touching each other's faces and stuff. And Mister is just like, this is looking like, and doesn't say anything, is just looking. And then towards the end of the film, when there's a part of the film where he apologizes to Seeley and arrives in her pants store and says, these were things that you had left when you left for Memphis. And some of the objects include, her sister's hat, her baby Olivia's rattle where in the film she's able to take it away as her stepdad is yelling at her while she sees her baby in the store, and a framed picture of Suge. A lot of showing without telling.
Speaking of queer sensibilities, though, how was Coleman Domingo as Mister?
I loved Coleman Domingo's interpretation of Mister. He does an incredible job of showing a lot of nuance whenever he plays, like, such difficult characters. And I also appreciate how in this rendition it's a lot closer to the book's narrative around like the need for black men to heal their generational curses from their fathers who teach them toxic masculinity. Whereas in the original film, like even though don't get me wrong, Danny Glover is an incredible mister. In his portrayal in the original film, like it's not so much as framed as like, oh, I need this for healing. It's more so like, yeah, I did a good thing. I got the sisters back together and I could watch it from a distance and not be involved. Whereas like in the 2023 film, it's a lot more truer to the book, where like they're actually able to be family with each other, and that's a way for them to heal after all the abuse that's happened.
So the scene between Mr. and his dad and Harpo, I thought that dynamic was really interesting to look at the different generations, right? Yeah. And how they were, you know, responding. And it was sort of this, you know, the elder and then the current generation and what like Harpo was bringing to it, particularly in his like marriage and then divorce and then kind of getting back together. Well, not kind mm-hmm. of, I mean, getting back together, right? With Sophia. Yeah. I thought it was
they never really divorce either, but like they definitely are separated. Yeah, yeah.
That's true. And how did you feel about the store, Celie's store, opening that, like the portrayal of that?
Aww. I loved the colors in the film, and right. I love that there's so much vibrant colors, and there's just joy on all the women's faces in that scene. It was so nice. It was so nice, and seeing Sophia and Squeak get along in that scene was, excuse me, Mary Agnes get along in that scene was also very sweet. Even it was such a subtle sweetness, but it was still there nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. They had some vibrant colors in the stage adaptation at Theater La Dida as well. And as we were going along, there was some really lovely like light design. But about halfway through, I was like, it's called The Color Purple. Like, where are some purple gels here? And I kept waiting. I'm like, well, okay, when they get to the store, there's going to be like, you know, some of the pants are going to be purple. And no. And then at the end, they just bathed the whole stage in purple lavender light. And I was like, oh,
like the color,
okay, I get you. I understand
purple.
What you're doing here.
Yep.
I was thinking like, oh, maybe there'll be some strategic use of purple. And I was like, no, I kind of like this, like the build up to it. And then like everything, you know, kind of that, I don't know if this is the right word. You can help me as a poet, apotheosis, like the getting to this moment and that song at the end there, what do they call that? The 11 o'clock number, not the name of the song in theater, musical theater parlance. I'm here.
So
I'm here.
You got the words down pegged. I don't think you need my help.
But, It was really well done, the theater, the production. And so I really hope that folks, if you're in Minneapolis, you should definitely check it out in Northeast Minneapolis. And if you're in the surrounding area, St. Cloud, Duluth, Eau Claire, Iowa, drive on up. It is worth the trip. You can have a nice weekend in Minneapolis, St. Paul, see an amazing production. Yeah. So I said earlier what my favorite song was, but what was your favorite song?
My favorite song is the song "Too Beautiful for Words," and I'm so glad you got to enjoy it seeing the stage production, because in the 2023 film we only hear it on a record, and it makes me very sad that we only hear it on a record. Yeah. And at the same time, it's like okay, I can forgive it slightly because we do hear "Push the Button" and we do hear "Sister." And that's not from the stage production. That's from the Steven Spielberg film.
That's interesting to have it on a record like that. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. And again, we do get what about love? And I'm glad we get that song too. But yeah, I would have, I wanted the ballad. I wanted Shug to give the ballad to Celie. You're too beautiful for words.
I
wanted it, and we only got it on a record.
Well,
for like 3 seconds.
Well, speaking of traveling, so this production at Theater La Dada is actually in co-production with Jiva Theater in New York. So it will be headed to the Jiva Theater later this spring. So I know like you're in Maine, and that's, yeah. I don't know how actually far the distance is between that, but I'm just putting
it's
it
like
out there. Also,
drive.
Shout out to the Jiva. Oh, you could have a lovely weekend. at the Jiva Theater. Well, I do want to give some time to talk about. So when we originally talked, it was like in the fall of 2023. Tell us about your book. Congratulations again.
Thank
you. And I want to know what you're currently working on, the updates on that, because it's been a few months since we talked.
It has, yeah. It's been so nice seeing people's responses to my second poetry collection, Refused a Second Date. And like, I love that people are enjoying the Marge Simpson poem, because that poem is about, oh, you mean to tell me Marge Simpson is not black? That's what you're trying to tell me. And like looking at the dynamics of like her being married to a white man, an incompetent white man at that. And like, and I just love that people are responding to that poem a lot. And I got to perform at Beat Night in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and I asked them to, and it's a type of reading series where you get to have a band play as you're reading poems, and I asked them to play the Simpsons theme song. So I was reading the Marge Simpson poem, and it brought me a lot of joy.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's amazing. Congratulations. And so what are you currently working on?
I'm currently working on a poetry manuscript on grief. I've been submitting it to so many places. But I've also been writing more poems about family, and when it comes to like family and talking about therapy, which I've written about before, but like, but it's interesting trying to formulate another manuscript that's just specifically about family dynamics and not just like reactions to like religious related trauma and family or like dating and family, like just actually getting to look at like how family members speak to each other or dream about each other or like the type of commentary that's had. And yeah.
And how did the play go?
The play went very well. Thank you so much. For folks who don't know, I had the opportunity to co-direct a play for the first time. It was James Imes's White. I got to co-direct with my great friend Josh Shu, and it ran from November through December. And we got really good feedback. We got good feedback from the Portland Press Herald, which we're very grateful for. And it was a really good run while it lasted. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have any upcoming theatrical projects, maybe?
I'm currently acting for the Children's Museum and Theater. Yeah. I'm playing five different characters in their production of The Neverending Story.
Damn.
Yeah. It's a great time. And that goes up in April, so it's coming up very soon. We do Tech Week next week. And my roles are double casted. Sophia Diaz is also casted in the same roles I'm casted in, and we're both having a great time.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, congratulations on all. I keep saying congratulations, but I'm really happy.
No,
I want to be congratulatory.
Thank you. I love congratulatory vibes. Congrats to you on all the good things. Congrats on GLAAD. Friggin' recognition from GLAAD. Congrats again on that. Congrats on all of your good things.
Oh my
Congrats
gosh.
On your creative life. Congrats on all beautiful things.
Yeah. That's our word for today. For the episode of the This Queer Book, it was particular. And today,
our word
for the day can be congratulations.
I love that for us.
Well, Maya, as folks I'm sure can tell, I love talking with you. So anytime you've got something coming up here, particularly if you're coming to Minnesota, let me know. We'll have you back on the show and we'll chat, because
I
love
so
chatting
much.
With you. So we'll talk soon, right?
Yes. Oh my goodness. For folks who do not know, this is happening again simply because JP commented on Instagram, have you seen it? And I was like, I'll email you. And it took me a few weeks to send the email because I got to distill all my thoughts. And then I sent the email and then about all my thoughts on The Color Purple 2023. And JP was like, let's talk about it on the podcast. And I was like, yes, please and thank you. Yes.
And here we are.
So thank you so much. Thank you so.
An absolute friend of the show. Well, thank you very much, Maya. We will be talking to you soon. Your website is mayawilliams.com for folks who want to connect with you.
mayawilliamspoet.com. So M-A-Y-A williamspoet.com. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you again.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, hello, Anahit Kass. Welcome to The Gailey Show. So tell us about your new book. Congratulations. It's very exciting. As folks who have been longtime listeners of either The Gailey Show or This Queer Book Saved My Life know, I am the founder of the Queer Armenian Library as well. And so I am a big fan, obviously, having scoured the internets and bookstores to try and find every single book that's been written, published, or is about queer Armenians to put it all in a single place. So it's very exciting to be learning about and be reading a new book that is has the themes of queer Armenianness in it. So Anahit, go ahead, introduce yourself and tell us about your new book.
Yes, I'm Anahit Kass. I'm a writer and artist. My new book is Reparations of the Heart, Toward a Swan of Futurity. And it is about Swan of Futurity through an Armenian lens, a queer feminist Armenian lens.
And for folks who don't know Swana as a term.
Southwest Asia and North Africa. It's a non-colonialist term for Middle East.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so what really intrigued me about the title was the focus on futurity, because a lot of Swana literature is very historical and looking at the past and analyzing that, which is very important. I don't want to discredit that in any way, shape, or form. But when I saw the word futurity, I was like, oh, hello. So tell me more about that.
So I guess I've been thinking about this for quite a while, the way that queer folks are really ostracized from their communities in many Swana ethnicities and how hard it is for us. But I started thinking about how we've all suffered so much of the same kind of traumas historically. We share a lot of culture and we have really amazing, unique cultures. And we could build a future that's inclusive and that maybe tracks more of the non-binariness, the queerness of nature, and really will help us to survive as a species over time. I also thought a lot about the way that time for a lot of Swana cultures is nonlinear. It's very much a slipstream of past, present, future. And how, we use that in our divination practices. I'm a coffee reader. So.
Are you?
Yes. Yes. One of the performance practices I use in my artistic practice is coffee reading. So I've done that in the last two exhibitions. And I think it's quite wonderful.
I hope that we meet very soon in person one day, because I have always wanted this. And like the aunties in my family and like my mom and, grandmother were very like against it. And I was like, how can you be against it? Like, this is so part of our culture. And so it's never happened. So I am so excited that you're keeping that tradition alive. And hopefully one day we're going to meet soon so that I can have my own cup read.
That would be so much fun.
Yeah. And for non-Armenian folks, that is, so Armenian coffee is very different from American coffee, right? So there's no filtration system involved. Right. It's made on a gorgeous looking pot. I know it by the term of cezve, which is actually a Turkish word, but it is, thank you. There's the Armenian word. And so you boil the water and then you add the grounds. Some people add sugar, but I'm a non-sugar person. Mm-hmm. And then you stir it up. And it usually just until like little bubbles right along the side. And then you pour it into these beautiful little demi-tasse cups. And it's a nice, like, you know, it's not bitter, but it's a very strong like coffee. And then you sip it and then the grounds settle into the bottom. And then now how do you do the readings at that point? Do you, so do you do the, like the flip over into the, what's that little plate called? Or do you do it within the cup saucer. Itself?
I do both. So what I say is take your cup and think about with intention what you want me to look for in your cup and what you are thinking about. And then we turn it over and we let it sit. We let it wait for a minute. We just chat and maybe we eat some, I don't know, little jurabia or cookies or something. And then And then we separate it, and I will look at the saucer because the saucer often has interesting information. And then I will read the cup, and I will look for the things that you're interested in, that you're thinking about, that's really on your mind, going on in your life. And I'll look through the segments of past, present, future, all the things that people are looking for, family, relationships, you know, their own career interests, things like that. So,
And I love that you use the word slipstream. I've never heard Swana time or Armenian time described that way. And it totally is. And you have structured your book in three different parts that are kind of like a time slipstream. So let's start maybe with ancestors, which is the first part of the book.
The ancestors was that was such a trip to work on that. I looked for people of all different Swana backgrounds. There's lots of Armenians in this, obviously. But for people to connect with their ancestors. Now, we actually have some people who have connected with cultural ancestors. For instance, there's a writer who has connected with Issa Hakian as his cultural ancestor. And I love that. But lots of people connected with their grandparents or parents, things like that. And what I would do is I would work from a portrait of the person's ancestor, and they would embody these aspects of the of that person that they feel most, you know, that they love most, they feel most connected with. And then we'd make the portrait, and the backgrounds are collaged, basically. And we would talk about the things that are important. Where are you from? What things are important to you? What are visual markers of your connection to your ancestors? And then we'd make the portrait that way. So that's how they came about. There's some really wonderful portraits. There's a wonderful portrait of Leali in the book, and of her embodying her Yemeni grandmother and talking about her queerness and how that's not something that she ever felt she could really embody with respect to her ancestors until this in this moment when she realized, I can be me in all the aspects, including my queerness, that are me. And she doesn't have to approve of that. And yet I can still be this embodiment of her and her culture and her wisdom and her experiences. And that came through a lot in those ancestor portraits. So that's our connection to the past that we can build upon in both present and future. So that's where we start.
And then in the next section is the Republic of My Imagination, which I loved. Tell me more about that, because you're talking about the Republic and republics and democracies and countries. And like right now with Armenia and Azerbaijan trying to navigate border lines and all of that. And, you know, there's a lot of history that goes into that. But you've slipstreamed us into the present. And so take us through this part of the book.
So in the Republic of My Imagination, I started thinking, I had made a promise. This whole project started long, long ago, decades ago. I made a promise to my grandmother over a cup of Armenian coffee. There was a ruined church and mountains in my cup. And I promised her that one day, when I had children, I would take them to our homeland. I would find our village. I would touch the soil, I would drink the water, I would eat the fruits, and my kids would experience it too. So that's what I did. And we believed that our village was destroyed during the Hamidian massacres when my family fled the Harbet. the big city where they thought they'd be safe. Yeah. So we found someone who could read Ottoman Turkish and found out that our village wasn't destroyed. They changed the name of it. So we went, and this was the beginning of this whole idea. So we're walking through, and it's all Kurdish now. And the Kurdish people were so kind to us. And we found the church, and it wasn't burned like my uncle thought it, my great uncle had thought it was. And it started to be thinking, and my daughter and I were walking, and I turned to her and I said, oh my God, what if instead of committing genocide on all its non-Turkish population that it could, what if the Ottoman Empire had decided we're going to form a diverse republic? A republic, yeah, okay, we invaded and colonized other people's land, but we're here now, and we've been here, and we've lived together. So what if we formed this amazing republic with all our shared and diverse cultures? We'd be something the world has never seen and still hasn't seen and certainly hadn't seen in, you know, the 1900s. That could have happened. And I started thinking, well, why can't we have that now? Why can't we start looking towards the future and thinking we can be something different? We are animals endowed with this capacity for critical thinking and change and reason, and we could use this. And that was the whole genesis of this section. I just started thinking, we have so much more in common than separates us now. Why don't we do something with that? And so that's how that started. So people came together in that project. Some of the people in the portraits are friends, some of them are lovers, some of them are partners, some of them are complete strangers who just wanted to be part of the project. And I said, okay, you don't have somebody you want to be photographed with? Yeah, so that's how the Republic of My Imagination came to be, from that experience in our ancestral village. It was a wonderful experience. And I found that the queer folks in this project, they had, in that section especially, had lots to say about what they wanted and what they were looking for. And there's a wonderful portrait of a queer Armenian woman and a queer Iranian woman who didn't know each other to begin with, but became friends, and with me too, through this project, but talking about how they never thought they could be both queer and Armenian. These are mutually exclusive. And the Iranian woman was talking about how she felt that in order to be an Iranian woman, you have to be all these things, and queer is not one of them. And what a revelation it was to feel like, here I am in this space, and I can be so many things. And that portrait is called Beloved in the House of Love. And I think it's a good tie into Aisne's work about sexuality and stuff. But anyway, so that's how that section came about.
The future, a planet of our own. Mm-hmm. Share about that.
Okay, that was, I don't know, that I can't say which was my favorite section to work on, but that was so much fun. It was just so much fun because I got to write, I got to write a story about Azad Prime, which is the planet of our own, the place of freedom, and I got to photograph all these people in them. You know, there are recurring characters in that section, which you probably noticed if you looked at all the portraits, but it kind of takes you through first contact, which is the first photograph, and the explorer is a queer femme identifying person, and she's just stepped out of her ship, yep, and she's exploring this new planet, and she's realized that the air is breathable, so she set her helmet down, and there's little creatures looking at her, around, and she's walking into the future there, and that was really just amazing. And then the book contains writing by a number of other queer writers, and also they're all Armenian women writers. So I think that was wonderful. But that section of the book focuses on what queer futurity means to me and others, you know, which is a way of thinking of the world, outside the box of this kind of very binary, very capitalist, very consumerist, yeah, very restricted, very conformist way of looking at the world. When I, for me, I see human beings, on a spectrum of identities, and that change, that are fluid over time. And I would like everyone to see the world that way. It has to be non-binary because nature is non-binary and it's diverse, and we are all those things. So this section of the book is about that, and there's a lot of portraits that take you through the world of Azad Prime, this planet, that we step through the portal to freedom to find, and it talks a lot about the things we seek in the future. There's a portrait called By the Light of Our Moons. And I was thinking a lot about Wyatt's work, Christina's World, when I made that. And I was talking with the woman who's in the portrait about how she, as a queer woman, sees the future. And she said, one of the most important things to me is that we need to really recover our connection to our living planet. And we need to be stewards, not exploiters of the planet. We don't have dominion over it. We have stewardship. And so that's that portrait is about. And there's a lot of that in there. There's another portrait of an Assyrian woman who's in battle gear and she's shooting at a drone. And the idea about that is we want power to protect ourselves, not the power of aggression. And that's the world we're looking for, a world of like justice and peace, where we can all just be who we are. Queer, straight, whatever. It doesn't matter. We can be different, from different backgrounds with different thoughts, but we can just live together. And that's that section.
I'm curious, having spent this time thinking about futurity, mm-hmm. and writing a book does not take a short amount of time. So you spent some time really thinking about this, and I'm sure prior to this, in the genesis of the book itself, how do you find yourself now that it's out into the world, relating to the world? Is it different? Like, are your expectations different? Are they worse? Like, I'm just curious, after spending all this time thinking about the future and now having to be in our present, which is kind of dicey right now.
It's pretty, it could be pretty depressing, but one of the things I think about is that this is the only life we have to live. So we don't take a positive stance, and we don't look to the future, and we don't try to begin the process of living in justice and peace. Now, what are we going to have? And what are our children going to have? Queer people have children too. So I have two. And I want there to be a different future for them. And I think, that's how I navigate a world where I just lived through another genocide of my people in Artsakh. And now I'm watching the genocide continuing in Palestine. And I have lots of Palestinian friends. And you just keep seeing it. And I still think we have to have a positive outlook, because what are we going to do? We protest, we are angry, but it doesn't change the world. We can change the world one by one. So I think that's how, and I think our joy in the face of this, and our perseverance, and our decision that we're going to have a different future, that is radical. And it's kind of like, screw you to all the powers in the world that say, no, this is only a world for the wealthy and powerful. The rest of you are here to serve. This is, we can have something different. So,
So for listeners who aren't completely steeped in Swana history, and what I appreciate about how you're taking a Swana lens to this, right? So the Ottoman Empire, and it's really getting to me thinking about what your friend said about the Republic and what they could have done, the Ottoman Empire, of having this really multicultural and diverse Republic, and how they went in the other direction, which is to commit a genocide against not only the Armenian population, but the Assyrian population, and to ethnically cleanse the Greek population, right? And to basically eliminate anyone who wasn't Turkish. And now we see, fast forward to 2023, where Turkey enabled and supported Azerbaijan to ethnically cleanse over 100,000 Armenians mm-hmm. from their indigenous homeland in Artsakh, and to have been doing that systemically also prior for 9 months before mm-hmm. that. It wasn't just, you know, a blitz, you know, military takeover of the country. It had been followed right. by starving them out, you know, mm-hmm. not allowing medical supplies and not letting in, you know, medicine, turning off, you know, the internet, you know, and it went mm-hmm. on and on. And the West kind of didn't do anything. Not kind of, mm-hmm. they didn't do anything, right? And so we see this project that the Ottomans started over 100 years ago and how it is still being replicated today. They are still trying to enact it today, just in different various formats mm-hmm. of getting rid of anybody who isn't a Turkic person. And you see this, then the ripple effects that are happening. And I think that I so appreciate what you're trying to do here and put out into the world about this futurity, because we can get trapped in this history mm-hmm. repeating itself. And if you don't know your history, then you're doomed to repeat it. And I think there is that sense of that, absolutely. But then you kind of get just trapped in this cycle. And so I really appreciate, Anahit, of how you're, you know, A, the metaphor of the slipstream, but also how you're putting that futurity in there. And you're talking about that in a way of how do we break this cycle and get out of this cycle. And mm-hmm. so I you know, reading the description and the one sheet of your book is just very, very excited. And I can't wait to get my own copy and to sit down with it and to just, you know, enjoy that with a good cup of Armenian coffee.
I hope so. Yeah. Thank you.
So how can folks connect with you? How can they order your book?
The book is available from Fifth Wheel Press. And also you can find it on my website, which is kristencast.com. And yeah.
Perfect.
I don't know all the bookstores that have it, so it's probably easiest to go on Fifth Wheel Press's site.
Absolutely. Well, and for folks, you know, go to your local library, go to your local bookstores, and if they don't have it, then you can always tell them to purchase copies and they will have them there for you in libraries to loan out to folks and bookstores for you yourself as the book buyer. Anahit, thank you so much for joining us here on The Gailey Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening and or watching today. Our podcasts are executive produced by Jim Pounds, creative and accounting support provided by Gordy Erickson, production, distribution, and marketing support provided by Brett Johnson, Chad Larson, Laura Hedlund, and Jennifer Ogren from AM950. You can find us on social media. Search for This Queer Book Saved My Life on Facebook. We're at This Queer Book on Instagram and at the _Gailey Show at Instagram. Follow us there for preview interview clips from upcoming episodes. For The Gailey Show, you can check us out on our YouTube channel, unless you're watching us there right now. We're also on AM950's YouTube channel and their Facebook page. As always, you can connect with us through our website, thisqueerbook.com. On our website, you can leave me a voice message of the current LGBTQ books, film, or TV you're loving right now. And if you send me a message, I will share it on the air with the community. Go to our homepage, thisqueerbook.com. And until our next episode, see you queers and allies in the bookstores.